Thus far, we've talked an awful lot about obstacles to crown power based on politics, based on institutions, based on clientage, based on aristocrats. There's another entire category, however, of limitations on the power of the crown, which is, it must be said, rather less exciting, but is arguably at least as important, if not more so, and that is the limitations on the power of the crown in virtue of finance. There's a basic phenomenon which we're going to encounter again and again and again and again in the lectures that follow, which is that European monarchs are always on the verge of bankruptcy. They're always looking for money anywhere. In fact, the German Emperor Maximilian I had his horrible reputation of traveling around Germany with sort of entire trains of aristocrats in tow, almost begging for money for people to pay for his various military expeditions, also his mistresses and things like that. During the early 16th century, the French crown is actually able to ratchet up tax collection, but it's never enough to compensate for inflation. And what ends up happening is the crown finds itself relying ever more on financial expedients. Just to give you some hard figures, although it should be cautioned that in the 15th and 16th century, hard figures are never really all that hard. But during the reign of Louis XI, who was king of France between 1461 and 1483, the tithe, that is to say that direct tax on property, made up a little over 80% of all of the crown's revenue. By the time we've come to the mid-16th century, by 1547 when the figures are available, the tithe only makes up about 36% of all the crown's revenue. So the original financial foundation of the crown isn't really cutting it anymore. So the question then becomes, where did the money come from? Where does the crown get money? Well, broadly speaking, there are two sources. One, borrowing, which is a short-term, not a long-term solution. And second of all, the sale of offices. And this brings us to a peculiar institution of early modern France, which has an historical importance completely out of proportion to how familiar most of us are with it. That is venality of office, that is to say, the selling of royal offices. Venality of office is not new in the 16th century. It goes back to the Middle Ages. What is new, however, is the massive extension of the selling of offices and the fact that the crown is no longer ashamed of it. It openly acknowledges this. Like I mentioned earlier, in 1522, Francis I sets up a special office to handle the revenue from the sales of offices. Almost all royal offices are now for sale. It is true that the would-be office holder has to meet certain kinds of qualifications. This usually includes university training. At times, he has to have had service as a lawyer or in some kind of junior office. But the office was now the property of the office holder. By paying an extra fee, the officer could even acquire heritability in that office. And should the heir of an officer be rejected by his intended colleagues, the crown is forced to buy back the office and find a new purchaser. Why does any of this matter, you might ask? Well, there are three essential consequences of venality of office, which we're going to see really kind of elaborating themselves in France throughout the 16th and the 17th centuries. First of all, the inevitable widening of the system, and it widens inevitably because the crown is always greedy for more money, it means that the crown's authority becomes hampered by property rights. We might think that, well, the king could always get angry and say, fine, I'll dismiss these venal officers. But if he arbitrarily dismissed officers he didn't like, he would undermine the value of the investment. Who's going to invest in an office that the king might take away from you when he's in a bad mood? On the other hand, and this is the upside to venality of office, by creating and selling new offices, the crown could now tap otherwise inaccessible sources of capital. People who might otherwise be exempt from taxation or who could hide the funds might be willing to buy these offices. Finally, the spread of venality of office gradually alienated the old aristocracy from its former role in the routine processes of government, because as people began buying into slots in the royal office system, it became harder and harder for royal magnates to place their own clients in the bureaucracy.